MasterPCast.com. My name is Walter, and today we're going to talk about the Bhopal disaster. Now, to start the Bhopal disaster discussion, we have to go back, talk a little bit about the city itself, a little bit about the history. Bhopal is a city that's in the middle of India. If you take a look at a map of India, it is almost right smack dab in the middle. It's got a pretty warm climate all year round. So if you think about Phoenix, it's actually hotter than Phoenix overall, which is in itself pretty harsh. Now, the population of the entire Bhopal district today sits at 2.3 million. At the time, the city of Bhopal was just over 1 million, and that's just the city itself. During the industrialization of India, lots of companies started to decide, well, we can make money throughout the world, not just in the U.S., so how about let's, you know, start setting up shop elsewhere? And India was one of those places that said, come on, you know, you partner with us, we'll go into business together, we'll share everything. So that's what led a lot of companies to go over to India and start doing business there. Union Carbide had a specific interest in going over to India because it was a primary maker of the pesticide Sevin, S-E-V-I-N. And Sevin is a pesticide that's used throughout the world. It's today the third most popular pesticide in the United States, and it's still very, very common throughout Asia. So at the time, Union Carbide wanted to corner that market if they could, so they decided to set up shop in India, in the city of Bhopal, to make Sevin. When Union Carbide went into India, they bought a piece of land that was designated as light industrial commercial use. It was not designated for hazardous industry at all. There was to be no hazardous industry on top of that land because of the approximation of the where the plant was in conjunction to the city of Bhopal. So what they did to begin with was Union Carbide went ahead and they made their plant there, and they were going to produce this chemical Sevin, but they were going to do it in a way that wasn't as hazardous. And the way they would do that would be they were going to import the intermediary chemical that they needed to produce Sevin. That chemical is called methyl isocyanate. You might hear me refer to it through this podcast as either methyl isocyanate or MIC. Either one, that they are interchangeable. So you need MIC to produce the chemical Sevin. So we can't do heavy industrial stuff here, so we'll just import it. And that made perfect sense. So the plant was set up in 1969. They started the importation of MIC. They were doing just fine. But in the 1970s, if you were alive like I was during the 1970s, I remember my childhood, how the economy started to tank. So there was a lot of economic pressure going on at the plant in particular. And so what the Union Carbide officials decided to do was, instead of importing the methyl isocyanate, they decided to start making it on site. Now that is where basically things start to go wrong. In the late 1970s and early 1980s, before the Bhopal disaster, the environment at the Union Carbide Bhopal plant was profitability trumps safety every time. It is the complete opposite of what you would think would be at an industrial plant that produces these chemicals, but it was the norm of the day. Most of the engineers that worked at the plant did not speak or read English, but Union Carbide only provided manuals in English. They did not provide it in any local language. So the engineers were already mostly at a disadvantage. To make matters worse, there were no supervisors to work the night shift. This was due to budget cuts. Promotions in the plant were halted. if employees found a leaky pipe, they were told not to fix it, not to replace it. Other safety things that were supposed to happen, like readings that were supposed to be done of the tanks every hour, those were cut down to every 2 hours. And the amount that was stored in these tanks, which was set at a safe level, was actually ignored, and more chemicals were dumped into these tanks. The employees were not happy about this because, of course, they lived there. They were going to be affected by anything that happened at the plant. So they protested. One of them did a 15-day hunger strike, and for his protest, he was fired. A total of 70% of plant employees had some sort of fines levied against them for failing to deviate from proper safety procedures. Management said, "Don't worry about this, it'll take care of itself." The employees who were dedicated and were conscientious said, "No, we're gonna go ahead with the proper pay safety procedures as we should." And managers said, "Fine, well, we're gonna either fire you or we're gonna fine you." It was pretty awful. And if you think that the local government didn't know about it, well, actually they did. But they were so afraid of Union Carbide moving the plant away and taking all those jobs that they decided to not do anything about it. They knew they didn't care. They were too scared. They also, the local government, knew about a little slum shanty town that was built right on the grounds of the plant, right around the plant. And they were okay with it. They didn't want to do anything to upset Union Carbide for fear that Union Carbide would pick up shop and move. So we come to the night of December 2nd, 1984. Now, on this specific night, there was a maintenance crew that was working on a clogged water pipe that was 400 feet away from an overfull tank of methyl isocyanate gas. When an engineer came in around 11 o'clock, they noticed that there was a small leak of the MIC gas coming out of one of the main tanks. Okay, now the thing is, these small leaks are the venting of gas. This can happen. It is allowed because there is a vent gas scrubber, and that vent gas scrubber, its sole job is to basically take the bad things out of the gas that's being vented so that the pressure can vent away from the tanks while the dangerous chemicals are kept away from, the public. They stay out of the air. The thing is, on this particular tank, the emergency venting system had been turned off 3 weeks beforehand and could not be turned back on. This, what happened, is still a bit of a mystery even to this day. As I mentioned previously, there was a clogged water pipe that was being fixed 400 feet away from the MIC tank. 1 ton of water moved from somewhere in the plant, and still not sure where, into the tank that held 40 tons of MIC gas. Now, what happens when you mix methyl isocyanate gas with water is it creates an exothermic reaction. An exothermic reaction itself will go through and create a lot of heat and a lot of light. When it creates this in a controlled environment, like a tank, it's going to produce a ton of pressure. So the pressure in that tank just started to grow and grow and grow. They noticed it at 11 p.m. with this small leak, but it continued to grow and grow and grow. Now, when the methyl isocyanate gas goes to 200 degrees centigrade, which is about 400 degrees Fahrenheit, what happens is it actually degrades into lower chemical bonds. One of the things that it degrades down into is called hydrogen cyanide. Everybody knows what cyanide is. It's a poison. It kills pretty instantly. So the engineer that found this leak in the tank, okay, we have a small leak. It's got to be vented. It can't be vented. What do we do to fix it? We have to bring the temperature down so that we can stop this exothermic reaction. We have to bring the temperature down quickly. So they had at the Union Carbide plant a 30-ton refrigeration unit. It was there as a safety component. The plant was supposed to have it there as some sort of safety backup in case something like this happened. The thing is, the tank was there, but because of the economic situation at the plant, the coolant that was in the refrigeration tank had actually been drained to be used elsewhere in the plant. So there was really nothing that the engineers could do. They couldn't refrigerate it because there was no way to do the refrigeration process without the coolant. And this small leak, because of this exothermic reaction, kept getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And soon, 1 a.m. on December 3rd, a large boom just is heard throughout the plant and the surrounding area. And what that boom was the tank exploding and the methyl isocyanate gas going into the atmosphere, affecting the 1 million people that were mostly asleep during that time in Bhopal. The effects of the MIC gas and the resulting, as many have said, the resulting hydrogen cyanide gas was really apparent once the sun came up. The streets of Bhopal were littered with human corpses. There's an estimate of 3,800 people dying immediately overnight. So there were bodies littering the streets, and not just humans, of course. Cow, buffaloes, dogs, cats, birds, chicken, other poultry, just lying on the ground everywhere around Bhopal. It's estimated that in the first couple of days, 10,000 people overall were killed by the gas leak. Union Carbide, when they first put out a press release as to say what was happening, what was going on, how these people were endangered, they actually said, please, hospitals, treat these people with a drug called sodium thiosulfate. Now, that drug is specifically used to counteract cyanide. So, if you actually have cyanide poisoning, sodium thiosulfate actually will reverse it and you can come out of it. Thing is, later on, Union Carbide actually withdrew that statement. It was almost as if they were trying to hide the fact that, yes, we know it was MIC gas that was done, but we don't really want to talk about possible cyanide poisoning. They wanted to shy away from it. Now, the result, as you can imagine, was just insane. The local hospitals were so overwhelmed, not only because, there weren't enough beds. If you've got 170,000 people to treat, you're not going to have beds for 170,000 people. You're going to have, a few hundred beds at best. You're also not going to have enough doctors. So nobody is going to be set up for something like that. But the little bit that's worse in this entire thing is that the city of Bhopal itself had no citywide trauma plans. That in itself, okay, fine. In the 80s, in India, which was a third world country at the time, fine. That may be something that you expected. You wouldn't expect it today. You would expect cities, especially one that is as big as Bhopal, to have some sort of plan. But at the time, yeah, absolutely nothing. So it turns out that they didn't have enough emergency plans. They also didn't have enough plans to deal with the mass bodies that they had. Turns out that they basically took those 3,800 people that were estimated to have died immediately, and they basically just created mass graves and just started just dumping all the bodies in these mass graves. There were, like I said, 170,000 people that were treated. There were mass graves for the people killed overnight, and there were thousands of animals that were picked up because they were littering the streets too, and they were buried or burned. Now, I will say one thing about that. You pick up a whole bunch of bodies, you put them in the dirt, you expect your local water to be filtered from the dirt. So what does that mean? You've not only had this major chemical spill that has killed thousands of people and injured hundreds of thousands of people, but you're also basically taking all that crap produced by Union Carbide and dumping it into the ground. And what's the result? Your groundwater supply is basically going to be tainted for years and years and years to come. One of the final tallies that, and I will say that in researching this, there's a lot of different answers, lots of different estimates as to what the tallies were. But it showed that there were 520,000 people affected by the catastrophe. That is almost the population of Albuquerque, New Mexico. That's huge. 200,000 of those people were below the age of 15 years. 3,000 of those people were pregnant women. And of all of these people, between 100,000 and 200,000 had a permanent injury of some sort. They are affected by this for the rest of their lives. Probably one of the best sites that has the most research on this that I came across, it estimated that there were 554,895 people that were affected. And that number is from the night of December 2nd, 1984 to today. And you're thinking, well, today this disaster was, 28 years ago. Well, there were people that were killed then. There were people that were affected then. There were the pregnant women who gave birth, had problems in birth. There are people who got pregnant later on. Those children have issues. So there are basically, it's like I said, the population of Albuquerque, New Mexico, all affected one way or another over the last 28 years. Union Carbide, for its part, was insured for $350 million, million with an M. And when the Indian government went to Union Carbide, they said, pony up. We want $3.3 billion. And I have a feeling, although I don't know for sure, but I have a feeling that was just basically a start. What happened was lawsuits and all the regular crap that happens in situations like this. The settlement didn't happen until 1989, a full 5 years later. And Union Carbide ended up only paying $470 million. That's the initial amount that they had offered, $350 million, plus $80 million in interest. So they ponied that up, but they also set up a 500-bed hospital that was to be there to be dedicated for free medical care for the survivors of Bhopal, and it was to be funded fully by Union Carbide for 8 years. That hospital was dedicated in 1998. So I actually do not know the status of that hospital now. It should have only been paid through 2006. I'm assuming that the hospital is still there and still running and still dealing with the fallout of the Bhopal disaster of 1984. Now, the legal fallout of this, there were actually no criminal charges, even though there was plenty of evidence to the fact that this was criminal negligence. What happened, though, was there were 8 men that were charged and convicted of negligence, not criminal negligence, but other negligence. And they were all sentenced to 2 years in prison and fined a number of rupees. I cannot remember the exact amount of rupees, but the US equivalent was $2,100. So you had basically a little over $16,000 that was paid by the Union Carbide worker officials that basically created this nasty situation for 500,000 people that were affected. One final note that I have about this is, as I was doing the research on Bhopal, I actually found a news article from June 8th, 2012. So literally 2 weeks from the date of the publication of this podcast, the Indian government actually finally had a way to dispose of the environmental waste that came from Bhopal. They collected the topsoil and other affected, by bits of the environment, much like what happens at a U.S. Superfund site, and they put all of this chemically sensitive, nasty stuff together, and they basically agreed to let Germany take it. Germany is going to dispose of it whatever way is possible, and I apologize, but I do not know how the proper, procedure is for getting rid of these chemicals. But Germany, they're pretty industrial over there. They're pretty ingenious. They know how to do this. So they're going to be getting rid of this stuff for India 28 years after the fact. One last thing that I wanted to point out, the Bhopal, what I've touched on here is basically just the tip of the iceberg for this disaster. There's a lot to read up on, and there's a lot still going on today. Now, if you want to get more involved, you can go to bhopal.org, Bhopal.org. There will be a link on catastrophecast.com. If you go there, you can read up on the Bhopal disaster, and you can actually make a donation. They actually have it specifically set up for UK donations, but there's a special section for international donations, and I noticed the first one that you could choose was a US donation. So if you're in the US or UK and you have a couple extra bucks, consider donating because this city is still here and is still hurting. That's it for this podcast. I want to thank you for listening. And if you want to get a hold of us about the Bhopal disaster, about the previous podcast, the American Airlines crash, or if you want to talk about something you want to see covered in an upcoming podcast, please head over to catastrophecast.com and drop us a note, or you can email us at podcast@catastrophecast.com. Thanks for listening.